ప్రేమస్వరూపులారు,
ఎంబాడిమెంట్స్ ఆఫ్ లవ్.
శాంతి నీ లోపల ఉన్నది కానీ బయట లేదు.
పీస్ ఇస్ విత్ ఇన్, నాట్ అవుట్ సైడ్.
అవుట్ సైడ్ నో పీస్, ఓన్లీ పీసెస్.
Dear listeners, Saram from Prashant Thinnalayam, and welcome once again to Outside Inside Deep Inside. We continue our stories about the Satya Sai saga. And today, I'm not going to tell you stories from Bhagwan's life that unfolded in the early years of 40s and 50s. That's what we have been doing in the last few weeks in our series Satyam Shivam Sundaram. But today, I'm going to share with you the journey of one soul who was chosen by Bhagwan to lead so many very, very important service initiatives. Someone who has been an indelible part of the Prashant Thinnalayam Ashram for close to 40 years. Someone whose life is a saga for us to imbibe lessons on commitment, sacrifice, service, and most importantly, yearning for the divine. If you are someone who is a frequent visitor of Prashant Thinnalayam, and if you have been there in the women's section of the South Indian canteen, you would have seen her always clad in white, always full of energy, always in control of the task in hand. Bhagwan entrusted her with the opportunity to look after the ladies section of the South Indian canteen way back in 1974, prior to the 50th birthday celebration of Bhagwan. And since then, this chosen servitor of Bhagwan has taken care of the women's side affairs of the South Indian canteen with utmost dedication, superlative sincerity. And now, even at the ripe age of 85, she used to go to the canteen. That is the story, the fantastic tale of Miss P. Surya Kanta Magaru. Just 1 or 2 years ago, she slowed down. Otherwise, even now she wants to go to the canteen and continue the work. The spirit is high, just that the limbs are asking for more time. She has to give time to her tired limbs. And even though she's not as strong physically, but she still continues to plan and execute many social welfare initiatives. Nobody knows about all this. She does it silently from her little room in South Prashanti. She is blessed to stay just right opposite to Yajur Mandir, opposite to Bhagwan's residence. She is part of that row of houses in the ashram who are closest to the Mandir. South Prashanti, ground floor. And if you spend just a few minutes with her, you'll be filled with tremendous inspiration. Inspiration to lead a life of surrender and supplication and selfless service to the Lord. And everything coming from a very, very solid bedrock of sadhana. Sadhana which is nothing but just pining for the Lord. Sadhana, which is nothing but just having Him as the sole goal in life. Sadhana, which is nothing but wanting Him and Him alone to the exclusion of everything else of the world. Sadhana, that is nothing but serving the Lord, serving everyone possible so that my Lord will be happy, so that I can become closer to the Lord, so that my Lord will look at me, will talk to me, so that I can feel the love of my Lord and share this glory with everyone. And if you look around Prashanthi Nilayam, the ashram is full of such souls. There are so many such silent, bright, effulgent flames. They merge in the bright sunlight that is Prashanthi. In fact, I feel Prashanthi Nilayam is an eternal yagnam. It's a sacrifice. It's a homam that is going on. And into this yagnam is poured the sacrifice and the sadhana of so many such pure souls. This is the ghee that is poured into this eternal yagnam that is Prashanthi Nilayam. And more, when this ghee of sacrifice and sadhana is poured, the brighter the flame of Prashanthi Nilayam is. And that is the reason why it glows, that is the reason why it grows, that is the reason why it welcomes and it pulls everyone to its presence. When you meet such souls in Prashanthi Nilayam, just meeting them, talking to them, interacting with them, taking blessings from them, is itself a fortune. Surya Kantamma Garu is one such soul. We read scriptures, we read about devotees of the Lord. We read about a Sudama. We read about a Kubja, we read about a Shabari. I feel there are so many such Radha-like, Meera-like, Shabari-like souls all around us. Whenever the Lord takes a human form, such souls also drink deep from that nectar. That is His physical avatar. And He is surrounded with such purity. We sometimes miss to notice these flames of devotion. The story of how Surya Kantamma Garu got involved in this 4-decade-long mammoth seva in the South Indian canteen. The story of how she first saw Swami, the story of how Swami pulled her, the story of what Swami told her when Swami saw her for the first time, the story of how her commitment and love for Swami was so intense that the Lord also bended His rules to take her closer to Him. How did she get this chance to be in Prashanthi Nilayam, to become a permanent resident of Prashanthi Nilayam, to stay close to Yajur Mandir? And most importantly, how Swami guided her on her spiritual journey. How at every step of her spiritual sadhana, Bhagwan slowly took her higher and higher. 85 years of loving the Lord, living with the Lord, serving the Lord. What are the lessons that we can take from her life? What are the lessons that we need to imbibe if we want to serve the Lord, if we want to sanctify our lives? I feel the stories of the Lord is not different from the stories of the devotees of the Lord. There is no Lord without the devotee, and there is no devotee without the Lord. This is Sai Bhagavatam. And this is an unending saga. In the next few episodes, it will be my endeavor to share with you tales from the life of Suryakantamma Garu. She is still in Prashantinilayam. Her memory is fantastic. She is still so active. She still remembers so vividly what happened 60 years ago, what happened 50 years ago, what happened in 1953, 57. Everything. What happened when she was 9 years of age. Everything is so clear, crystal clear in her mind. Swami says, what is of interest to you, you will never forget. And that is the reason why perhaps all those moments are so vivid in her mind. Earlier, in Outside Inside, Deep Inside, I have shared with you similar stories. Story of the life of Mrs. Ratanlal, who took on almost the role of Bhagwan's mother after Mother Isharama merged at Bhagwan's feet. I shared with you the story of Mr. Raman Rao, who pioneered the Sevadal movement and headed it till almost he was 85 and continued to serve Bhagwan even after that as the editor of Sanatana Sarathi. I shared with you the story of Mr. Pant, who is 100 plus and still serving Bhagwan, looking after Shanti Bhavan, the guest house. I told you the story of Mr. KBR Prasad, Bhagwan's chosen instrument to look after the PA systems whenever any function happened in Prashantinilayam. Look at every institution of Prashantinilayam and you will find Bhagwan had picked such pillars, such, I would say, conflagrations of inspiration. They are not just flames. They are huge fires of inspiration. And every institution still glows because there are such people who have given their everything for Bhagwan's love, his mission, his work. So Kantamma Garu came from a family of freedom fighters. Her father, Mr. I. Subbaraju, was a freedom fighter who was jailed during 1945-46. And unfortunately, while in jail, her father lost his life. And this happened before India's independence. Kantamma was just 9 years old then. And she was taken to her maternal uncle's place, her mother's brother's place. So the uncle and aunt looked after this little girl who was now fatherless. at maternal uncle's place, this little girl, Kantamma, would look at the aunt who was very, very devoted to Lord Panduranga. Aunt would perform puja daily to Lord Panduranga. And as the aunt would do the puja, she would call this little Kantamma. And the girl would sit there and observe the way aunt did the puja with so much love. And the aunt would tell her the story of Meera, of Sakubai, how they longed for the Lord and the Lord longed for these devotees. And as she would listen to these stories, it would occur to this little girl, if Meera and Sakubai could become such great devotees. And this did not happen in Dwapara Yuga or Treta Yuga. All this happened very recently. If they could get the Lord for themselves, why can't I? Why can't I follow that path? Why can't I be blessed with such a blessing? Why can't I be like a Meera and Sakubai? That is what got instilled in this little girl when she was just 9. When she was about 13 years, the uncle and aunt felt that she should get married. In those days, marriages for girls happened very early. Child marriage was common. And there were a lot of other issues in the family to be sorted out with respect to partitioning of property and all that. And so everyone was waiting for this marriage to be over so that the uncles, other uncles would carry on with the other affairs of the family. And so, at a very early age, Kantamma was given in marriage. When she was 17, she already became a mother. She had a baby boy. Even though all this was happening in her life, even before her marriage, for Kantamma, the pull was to lead a life of sadhana, to become someone like Meera, to become someone like Sakubai. But she agreed for marriage because that is what the elders asked her. And in Indian tradition, one has to respect the elders. And so, even though she agreed for the marriage, she had told mentally to herself that, okay, by the time I am 19 or 20, I will renounce this life and I would dedicate myself completely to the divine. This is what she had told mentally to herself. She did not want to challenge the elders. So she went through the process of marriage and became a mother. When the baby was just 6 months old, her husband went to Hyderabad to attend an All India conference. That conference was presided over by Pandit Jawaharlal Nehru, the first Prime Minister of India at that point in time. He had not yet become the Prime Minister we are talking about. Yeah, he had become the Prime Minister in the initial years of India's independence. And since Kantamma's husband's side relatives as well as father's side relatives were all full of freedom fighters, So many members of her family went to Hyderabad to attend this All India conference. In a very tragic incident, her husband passed away during that event. Baby was just 6 months old and Kantamma garu became a single mother. Kantamma garu's mother was very sad and she was thinking how to handle the situation. And in fact, when this tragic thing happened, the maternal uncle and aunt felt the best thing to do for Kantamma is to introduce her to Lord Panduranga. They used to go to a shrine in Machilipatnam. Machilipatnam is in Krishna district of Andhra Pradesh. There is a village called Chilakalapudi in Machilipatnam, and in that village there was a shrine of Lord Panduranga. It was folklore that Lord Panduranga manifested himself in that village, in that temple. The founder of that temple was Bhakta Narasimhan, who was a long time devotee of Lord Panduranga. In fact, the story of Lord Panduranga manifesting there at Chilakalapudi is a very, very fascinating account. It is not really documented much in any literature. Chilakalapudi is, as I mentioned, very close to Machilipatnam in the Krishna district of Andhra Pradesh. Chilakalapudi is just 4 kilometers away from Machilipatnam. Machilipatnam is district and sub-district headquarters. And this little village of about 2,000 people, now there are about 500 houses in this village, Chilakalapudi, but in those days definitely the number was much less. But the village was known for the production of imitation jewelry. So all these ornaments, rings and pendants and nose rings and necklaces made with superficial gold, imitation jewelry as it is called, was very common in this place, and that place was known for the production of these jewelry. There was this person, Teki Narasimhan, originally from Srikakulam of Andhra Pradesh. He once went to Chilakalapudi to see his relatives, and he saw that all the relatives are busy making good money in this imitation jewelry business. And a thought occurred to him that maybe he could also do this. It seemed like a lucrative profession. So after visiting the relatives, he went to Tirupati, and somehow he felt convinced that he should go back and settle down in Chilakalapudi, and that's what he did, and he started his own business of producing these ornaments which seem like gold, but they're not gold. There was a big market for such jewelry. At the same time, this Teki Narasimhan was a very devout person. On one occasion, he went to Pandharpur. And when he was at Pandharpur, and when he had the darshan of Lord Vithala in that famous shrine when he had the darshan of Panduranga Rakumai there, he was so mesmerized by the darshan of the Lord that somehow he felt very, very drawn to Pandharpur, and he started going very often to the shrine. It was very far. Pandharpur is in Maharashtra, and it is on the other end of India, and here from Andhra to Maharashtra. But somehow that one darshan of Pandharpur was so fulfilling and so alluring and so mesmerizing for him that he started going to the shrine as often as he could. And during one of these visits to the shrine, he met a saint who was an evolved soul, a great devout devotee of Lord Panduranga, Sadguru Mahipati Maharaj, who was also called as Gunda Maharaj. And this saint, when he saw Teki Narasimhan, he gave him upadesha. He initiated him into the worship of Lord Panduranga. He initiated him into the tradition of revering and making Panduranga everything of your life. And this devotee, Teki Narasimhan, used to scrupulously follow the advice of this Maharaj, Gunda Maharaj. And once he was initiated into the Panduranga tradition, then he started following all the scriptural injunctions to be a devotee of Lord Panduranga. Every month he would fast on the Ekadashi day, on both the Ekadashis on the month, he would fast. And on the next day, after the fast, he would serve the poor and needy. He would do annadana. He would continuously do nama japa, because he was initiated into the japa of Lord Vithala. He would write the names of Lord Vithala. And with the resources he had, with the instruction of Gunda Maharaj, the Sadguru Mahipati Maharaj, he built a small temple just next to his house for the great devotees of Maharashtra, the great devotee trio, Gyandev, Namdev and Muktabai. And in the middle of all these idols, he kept the shrine of Lord Vithala and Rakumai. And so he would spend his time in this temple, doing his business, spending time in this temple, and whenever he could get an opportunity, he would go to Vithala, he would go to Pandharpur, and he would meet this Guruji who initiated him into the worship of Lord Panduranga. And he was very happy every time he went to Pandharpur. But he was not getting the opportunity to go as often as he would have wished to go to Pandharpur. And the love for Lord Panduranga was so intense, so much he started missing the Lord, that he started praying to the Lord, "Lord, please, why don't you come here? Why don't you come to my place? I long to see you. I come to Pandharpur, but I cannot come so often. Why don't you come to my place so that every day I can worship you, every day I can be with you, every day I can serve you?" And Lord Panduranga came in his dream. The beautiful Lord Panduranga, whom he loved. He was so thrilled. And when he told the Lord, "Lord, please come to my place," Lord Panduranga told him, "I will come. You make a temple for me. I will come." And Teki Narasimhan woke up thrilled after that dream, and his immediate task was to raise this temple for the Lord, because the Lord has promised, "I will come, you make a temple." And so he started looking for land, and that is how he found this unused land near Machilipatnam, and he sent an application to the collector asking for 2 acres of land, saying he wants to build this temple for Lord Panduranga. And the collector of that area granted him that space, because anyway that land was not being used for anything to do with cultivation. And Teki Narasimhan, in right earnest, started the construction of this temple. He used whatever money he had from his jewelry, imitation jewelry business, and he made this temple. Initially, the temple was a small one. The temple was built, and the Lord came in his dream once again, and he said, "Lord, you said you will come. The temple is ready. Please come, please come." And the Lord said, "I will come. I will come on Kartika Shukla Ekadashi day at 10:30 a.m. The Lord gave the date and time. The year was 1929, the month of September. And so once the temple was ready, Teki Narasimhan told the collector, told the superintendent of police, told all the villagers that the Lord has promised he will come at 10:30 a.m. on this Ekadashi day. And so after the temple was done, everyone was waiting for that moment. They wanted to be there. They wanted to witness that event. They wanted to see how the emergence of the divine will happen in that sacred spot. They wanted to be there when the Lord decides to reveal himself, when Lord Panduranga decides to be available for all the devotees. So on that day, 10:30 a.m., everyone was there. The crowds were maddening. The collector came. There was police bandobast and everything to control the crowd. Everyone wanted to be there and witness that moment of how the Lord will come and preside and install himself in that temple. So at 10:30 a.m., when all this was going on, the collector and the superintendent of police, they thought, is it all this true? How will the Lord come? And what is this person saying? Is this really going to happen? And so, just so that nobody has been taken for a ride, the collector came and at 10:30 a.m. he closed the door of the temple. Before 10:30 a.m. he closed the door of the temple. He sealed the door. And all the people were waiting, what is going to happen now? Because he felt if anything has to happen, it should happen automatically. Nobody should go and do anything. Because this is what he says, the Lord says he will come. And so, when the door was closed, a few minutes before 10:30, exactly at 10:30, a big noise came from inside. A big thundering noise came from inside at 10:30, and everyone was shocked, and they went, and the collector went, and they opened the door. How much ever they tried, they could not open the door. Everyone tried, but the door just did not open, and no one had any clue what they should do. Everyone was waiting with bated breath to see the Lord coming and installing himself in this temple. But after everyone tried and were unable to open the door, they just waited there patiently to see what is going to happen. And after a few minutes, they saw that the door automatically opened. The door opened on its own, and from inside, from the sanctum sanctorum, smoke and light emerged. And in that huge luminous emergence, they saw the idol. The idol was now there. The idol had come out of nowhere. It was a Swayambhu idol. The idol had decided to be there. The divine had decided to manifest himself in this temple. That is the story of Lord Panduranga Shrine in Chilakalapudi in Machilipatnam. It is considered to be the second most sacred shrine of Lord Panduranga after course, with time, the temple has been expanded. There are three big mandaps now, three huge pillared verandas before the main shrine. But on that eventful day in 1929, once the Lord manifested himself, he opened the door automatically and opened the eyes of everyone there. And that is how the glory of this temple spread far and wide. Everyone in that district, that surrounding districts, would come to this temple because they were there when the Lord so mysteriously appeared there. And in fact, in 1929, after the Lord's manifestation happened, a yagnam was done for 120 days, continuous yagnam was done, and 100 pandits did this yagnam. Every day food was served, and in fact there were days when the person who was making the food arrangements one day came and told this Teki Narasimhan that I don't know that tomorrow there is no food to serve. Again, people are going to come, but we do not have anything in our store. And he says, don't worry, Panduranga, we look after. And early morning, 3 o'clock, they find 3 lorries of food which just arrived from nowhere. The whole event of the manifestation of the Lord was filled with such miracles and such instances of his grace. And that is the glory of this beautiful temple. And this devotee, Teki Narasimhan, began to be called as Bhakta Narasimhan. It was his prayer to the Lord that, Lord, please come to our place. And the Lord listened to his prayer and created the shrine in Machilipatnam. In fact, Machilipatnam gets its name because in earlier era, there were very huge fishes in the seashore. It says it's a very beautiful place. And Machli in Hindi means fish, because the place was known for these huge fishes. It got that name, Machilipatnam. It has very beautiful sea and it has this beach. And into this beautiful shrine, into this beautiful locale, the Lord manifested. And it is to this Vithala that Kantamma Garu's uncle and aunt would pray to. This Bhakta Narasimha Das, Bhakta Narasimhan, became such a powerful pillar, powerful flame of inspiration for all the devotees. And when Kantamma lost her husband, then the maternal uncle and aunt gave her the book called Bhakta Vijayam. That book had the stories of several saints of Indian tradition. They also gave her an idol of Lord Panduranga and Rukmini, Rukmabai. This happened just 15-16 days after her husband's demise. And Kantamma read that book through and through. In fact, her whole life has been just reading and rereading and rereading this book. Reading the stories of the saints, reading the stories of those who conquered the heart of the Lord, reading the stories of those who pulled the Lord. And these stories influenced her so much that she started pining for the darshan of Lord Panduranga. And she started going to this shrine in Machilipatnam in Chilakalapudi. And she would go to the shrine and she would serve at the temple. She would spend days worshipping the Lord there. She loved to be in Chilakalapudi. One day, the priest there called Kantamma and said, I have got divine approval for you to be initiated into the Panduranga tradition. She was taken inside the Sanctum Sanctorum and she had the opportunity to touch the feet of Lord Panduranga. And who gave her this initiation? Who is the one who told her that the Lord has instructed that you should be initiated into the worship of Panduranga? It was the same devotee, Bhakta Narasimha Das. Bhakta Narasimhan, also called Narasimha Das, who pulled the Lord to install himself in Machilipatnam, told Kantamma Garu, the Lord is telling me to give you Diksha. The Lord is telling me to initiate you into the worship of Lord Panduranga. And it was that great soul who initiated her into the worship and the sadhana of Panduranga Bhakti. And that is how Kantamma Garu from that day started fasting twice a month on Ekadashi days, serving the poor, doing her quota of japam every day, doing Likhita Japam. She was just 19 years old when she was initiated into this Diksha. Her little son was just 2 years old. And the Lord gave her this opportunity to be initiated into the sadhana life. In fact, I was telling you earlier, when she got married, she had this thought that by the time I'm 19, 20, I would want to devote my life to sadhana. And the way it happened, her life actually happened that way. She married and in just 1.5 years, her husband left her. She became single. And when she was 19, the Divine instructed her into the sadhana of a spiritual life. And Kantamma Garu loved this sadhana. In fact, for 12 continuous years, she did this sadhana of fasting on every Ekadashi day, serving the poor on the Dwadashi day, doing this Likhita Japam. She would carry her Tulasi beads and she would do this Japam. She loved to be in that bliss of Panduranga Bhakti. She used to feel so spiritually elevated. And she used to always think, the Lord Panduranga, he gave darshan to Narasimha Das, to this Bhakta Narasimha Das. Will he come to me also? Will he bless me also? And it was at this point that she had a dream where Panduranga said, I will come to your home. And she thought, oh Lord, you have come from Pandharpur. You manifested in Chilakalapudi. Can I have the fortune of your darshan? And the Lord in the dream says, I will come to your home. So her life was just a life of constant pining for the Lord. That is doing the sadhana of Panduranga worship. That is how Kantamma Garu spent her life when she was 19, 20. While this is what was happening to her internally, the elders in the family, uncle and the other seniors in the family, they felt that she at a very young age is getting too much into bhakti. And they felt that they should engage her in some other work. They thought that would be better for her. And it was during that time that the government for the first time introduced the panchayat system. And according to this, the village was supposed to have a sarpanch, the village leader, and the local government system was being put into place. 1956-57, during that period. And Kantamma garu's father's brother told Kantamma that you should become the sarpanch, you should become the leader of this village. In fact, given that she was a very aware, very active and a very intelligent person, they felt that she could handle the responsibility even though she was just 19-20. And even though in that period women were never there working or holding office. In fact, she was one of the very, very rare occasions, maybe except there are maybe one or two other girls in whole of Andhra Pradesh who had some official position at that level. But the uncle of Kantamma garu said, no, you take up this position. And listening to her uncle, Kantamma garu agreed to become the sarpanch, the head of the village. And as she started assuming this role and she saw that her work meant to do so much for the people, and it was at that time that country had attained independence few years ago, and now the state of Andhra Pradesh came into being. And when she thought, what is it that will make my father happy? My father was a freedom fighter and he died in jail. Maybe if I serve the people, assuming this role, he will be happy because he always wanted to serve the country. So that gave her inspiration. And she accepted that role and she became very involved now to serve the people. In fact, it was in 1957 that 1956 when the Andhra Pradesh state came into being. In 1953 the Andhra state became one state. It was constituted by taking the Telugu speaking northern districts of Madras state. Earlier India had a Madras state. But this Andhra state was again reorganized, and on 1st November 1956, it was no more called the Hyderabad state or the Mysore state, Bombay state. That's how it was in the initial years of India's independence. The state of Andhra Pradesh came into being on 1st November 1956. Some parts like Gulbarga and Aurangabad divisions, they were merged into Mysore state and Bombay state respectively. Later on, the Mysore state became Karnataka, Bombay state became Maharashtra and so on. So in the first independent Andhra Pradesh state, Mr. Neelam Sanjeev Reddy became the chief minister, the first chief minister. And he knew Kantamma garu's father so well because they were all freedom fighters. On one occasion, when he had come for a function to Nellore, and that is when the elders introduced Kantamma to Neelam Sanjeev Reddy garu, and when he came to know that she is the daughter of the freedom fighter Subbaraju, who lost his life in the jail, he gave full support and he said, whatever you want for the people of your community, for your district, I will do whatever is needed. Whatever work you want to get done, you just come to me, I will get it done. Whatever grants you want, whatever money you want for the development. So that is how slowly after she was in the Sarpanch, she moved on to the district level. She was part of the district education committee of the Jilla Parishad and so on. So her life became full of social welfare activities as a local leader way back in 1957. That is the life of Kantamma Garu. She was the Sarpanch for 3 years. After that, she moved on to the district level. And she continued to do a lot of good for the development of the community. And even as this was going on, her love for the Lord, her worship for Panduranga never dwindled. Wherever she traveled, she would take her puja box, she would do her mandatory japam, she would fast on Ekadashi days. That continued. On one hand, that bhakti continued, and on the other hand, this seva for the country continued, walking on the footsteps of her father. She learned devotion to the Lord from her uncle and aunt, and serving the country from her father and mother, and that these two streams shaped her. The first chief minister of the Madras presidency was Tanguturi Prakasham Panthulu, who subsequently became the first chief minister of the new Andhra state, that which happened in 1953. The reorganized Andhra Pradesh state happened in 1956. But the first Andhra state happened in 1953. And the first chief minister of that state was Prakasham Panthulu. And he was a contemporary of Kantamma Garu's father. All of them knew Kantamma Garu, and they all supported her in all her social welfare developmental activities for the people of that area. And that really not only gave her a lot of experience in doing welfare activities, also gave her a lot of satisfaction that she was doing something that her father always wanted her to do. At the same time, the energy and the strength for this was coming from her devotion to the Lord. And it was in this phase of her life, when she was deeply involved in the activities of the Jilla Parishad, activities of serving the community and continuously going to Chilakalapudi and spending time there and worshipping Lord Panduranga and praying to Lord Panduranga for his darshan, praying to Lord Panduranga to fill her with his grace, that she was pulled to Bhagwan's presence. How that happened is a very beautiful story. And what happened when she first met Swami? What did Swami say? Those were prophetic words. In fact, that is how it was for all those chosen devotees. The first time Swami saw Professor Kasturi, Swami told her, "Hey, you are going to write my biography." In 1971, when Swami gave chance to Mrs. Ratanlal to be with him, Swami told, "Will you cook for me?" I think these are very, very landmark moments in the lives of these devotees. And it's a culmination of years of penance. It's a culmination of their sadhana of so many janmas. Bhagwan was waiting for such devotees to bless them and to hold them as ideals for us to emulate, if we want to love the Lord, if we want to serve the Lord. So we'll continue this in the coming episodes of Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. I will tell you how Kantamma garu had her first tryst with Swami, and after that, how that journey became a journey which filled her with bliss and took her life onto a completely different path, and she became a permanent servitor of Bhagwan and experienced what is divine love in so many of its dimensions. We'll come to that in the coming episode of Outside Inside Deep Inside. So dear listeners, there are so many such tales of commendable servitors of the Lord, and we will contemplate on these stories in the next few episodes of Outside Inside Deep Inside. As always, if you have any queries, you can write to listener@radioside.org. You can also send us your comments on our WhatsApp number 9393-258-258. Offering this little endeavor at his lotus feet, I take your leave, and let's pray to Swami that our lives too are sanctified with only his thought and with only his work in our minds. Thank you so much. Sairam.